Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the studios of KSFR, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Now, today is the first day of our annual opera series. Today and for the next four Mondays, we're going to be talking in turn about each of the five operas that is part of the Santa Fe Opera series, which opens, the Santa Fe Opera presentation, which opens on Friday, the 1st of July. I'm joined by Desiree Mays, who is an international lecturer on opera. She's the author of Opera Unveiled, which comes out every year to accompany the Santa Fe Opera. And is it, what, in its 12th printing?
No, 13th this year.
13th this
year. Amazing.
Amazing. So 13 years, and each year you write about each one of the five Santa Fe operas in this slim volume, which really makes it easy for people to follow along and see what's going on without reading an encyclopedia.
Yeah, there's a chapter on each opera, and it's easy to read the day before you go. I mean, that's part of the planning. If you're coming in from out of state, read it on the airplane.
Exactly.
Or read before you go to the opera. And they're not long. It gives the story and background and some of the interesting aspects of each opera. They're very varied this year, so there's a lot to cover, and it's all in Opera Unveiled.
Well, we're going to start with La Bohème by Puccini, and this is perhaps of all the operas this year the most accessible. The story is so well known. It's kind of is it the crowd pleaser of the season?
Well, that's going to be hard to tell. One never knows where the most magic is going to be in any given season until all five operas are up. There's something about this art form that it isn't until all the components come together, it's up there on the stage in front of an audience, that the magic happens. But this is probably the best known, of course, of all of the operas this season. La Bohème is one of the top 10 hits. It always was from the very beginning. One of Puccini's most popular operas. Faust II, in its day, was as big a hit. Actually, it was as well known. It's very interesting, I think, as fashion changes and music taste change, that some operas are popular this year and then 10 years from now may not be. Faust sort of did a dip in interest, but it's coming back. Whereas Bohème for 100 years has been the most amazingly popular opera.
So tell us first about Giacomo Puccini and his contribution to this whole genre of opera.
Well, Puccini comes at an interesting time in opera. He comes at the sort of towards the end of Verdi and Wagner's life. Now, people would assume that he is the son of Verdi because he's an Italian composer in terms of composition style. He's actually closer to Wagner, I think, in terms of how the music sounds. Verdi represented the end, probably the end of grand opera in terms of Italian grand opera, where it was massive productions with big stories, big sets, big costumes, big music. And they still dealt with characters such as royalty, gods and goddesses, though not so much with Verdi. By the time Puccini came along, things were changing. History was changing. Europe was changing. The whole world, these world wars completely disrupted the whole sociological tapestry of Europe and every country. And this, of course, is reflected in the artists who typically foresee these things coming, and it's in their music rather than follow in terms of what they're writing about. So with Puccini, he was known as a composer of Verismo, and that realism, if you like. And the term is used loosely. He was part of a group of young composers who wanted to move away from the grand opera style of Verdi, and maybe even from Wagner, though Wagner's grand opera was more in terms of epic stories that he addressed. So in this case, they decide they would take real people in real situations, and sometimes in pretty grim situations, people who are suffering, the man and the woman in the street, as opposed to the aristocracy or the royalty, and tell stories about them. So this story, La Bohème, is about four young men who are trying to make their way in life in Paris, living in the Latin Quarter in Montmartre. They've no money between them. There's an artist, a poet, a philosopher, and a painter. And these four guys were known as the Four Musketeers, and they actually would hang out at a restaurant in Montmartre called the Café Momus, which is still in existence. You can too go there and have a coffee or a glass of wine as they did. And they raised all sorts of hell. They were sort of a counterculture. They were what we would have called hippies.
Yeah, and, almost beat poets.
Exactly. And this all started with the opera with a book by a man called Henri Murger, who wrote the Scènes de la Vie de Bohème, Scenes of Bohemian Life in Paris. And when Puccini saw this book, it's a series of little vignettes, of little stories that happen. They started out as a journalistic articles, but became a book. Puccini read this, he thought, I recognize these people, because he too, as a young man, had been a starving musician in Milano. He had a grant to go to the conservatoire, but he really didn't have much money beyond that in terms of living and eating out. So he could totally identify with what was going on with these four musketeers, the four friends in La Bohème. And that's where it starts. And then when he came to looking for the heroine, she's a little seamstress. She's very poor, and she sits up in her freezing garret. And I promise you, in Paris in the middle of winter, there's that bone-chilling cold.
Yeah.
And that permeates this opera. There's a sense of the cold.
Yeah, you get cold watching it.
You do, exactly. Yeah, you're sitting, they start on Christmas Eve, and they're all wrapped up. They've no money for a fire. So they suggest that Rodolfo, whose play is not doing very well, that he uses it as tinder for the fire. So he tears up Act One and throws it on the fire. It's a lovely moment. And
it's very funny, too, because he's saying, ah, how witty, as the page burns.
As it's burning, and then the whole thing fades, but you know, doesn't have continuity in
right.
it. So there's a lovely little pun there. And that comes straight from the heart of Puccini. Puccini had a tough childhood. His father died when he was young. His mother was a saint. She raised a number of kids with virtually no money. But she always believed in Puccini's gift, and she supported him, and sadly died before he got to be really famous, which is one of the tragedies, I think, of life in this composer's life. So he identified well with these characters, and this was the direction that opera was going. His friends were Leon Canvallo and Mascagni, who wrote operas such as Cavalleria Rusticana and I Pagliacci, about very real situations. And so the opera is about a real situation.
Now, this opera premiered in 1896. So mm-hmm. although it's, I mean, over 100 years ago, it still has a kind of very realistic feel to it. I saw the DVD version in Australian production of it, which was actually set in the 1950s, and reading the subtitles, the dialogue, it looked as if it could have been written the day before yesterday.
Yes, this is one of those operas that you can put in any time frame. In fact, they made the musical Rent is the story of La Bohème.
That's right.
The hit musical with music that's very similar. She's not dying of tuberculosis in that show. She's dying of AIDS. So it has a contemporary feel to it. Yes, I think this is one opera that you can do that with.
Why don't we listen to just a little clip of music? And this is the part about the four Bohemian musketeers who are sitting around in their garret apartment in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Che sembra aver ciò che gli esprime dove la lunga
That's from La Bohème, the Four Bohemians. Now, the characters of Rodolfo and Mimi make a very beautiful love story. And I think it's one of the, I mean, just as theater, forget about opera, it's one of the beautiful examples of genuine love at first sight that develops with all its ups and downs throughout the opera. But that initial scene where she's coming up the stairs and she's cold and he
takes her in.
Yep. She loses her key. He pretends he finds it, but he pretends not to find it so that he can take her in his arms and hold her because she doesn't have her key to get out. It's a really beautiful thing. And if it's well acted, it's incredibly moving.
Yeah, it's very touching.
I imagine that there are so many different productions of it, but when there's chemistry between those two people, I bet, I don't know, who's going to be in the opera this year? Who's doing those parts? Do we know?
Yes, of course. In our production here, the fantastic Ana Maria Martinez, who sang last year, I think, in Don Giovanni, who has gone from strength to strength. She really looks the part. She'll be a very touching and very sweet Mimi. And it's a debut role for David Lomelli. He'll be Rodolfo. And Heidi Stober, who was so wonderful in Platé, will come back to sing Musetta. So this is a young cast. They look the part, and I know you love that. Though, actually, in the recording I'm going to play for you, the singers are Luciano Pavarotti and Mirella Freni, who are not the slimmest, starving-looking students by any stretch of the imagination. But that's, I think, part of the magic of opera, too, that where it is so beautifully sung, and they sing it like 16-year-olds who are falling in love for the first time, and the music tells you that, and you get that from their performance, you can look beyond the image, though that is changing.
Well, it's a generational thing. I mean, you started out in opera when you were very, very young, and you are a former ballet dancer for opera. Mm. Whereas I think more recent generations really demand that it be theater as well as opera.
Right, and the training is quite different now, too. These young singers are trained in languages, in acting, in dancing, in every conceivable aspect of theater. And appearance is important. I mean, you will still, of course, occasionally, even in the last Met auditions, have a young man or woman with an extraordinary voice who does not look right for any role, but it's okay because we are there for the music. We really are. And I think in this one, even though we know that Pavarotti was never exactly slim, you'll hear the beauty of his voice, the tone, and how he sings. He sings the famous "Your tiny hand is frozen" when she, they're both on the floor, her candle's blown out. The whole thing is a setup. She must have known these guys were there, and she comes down on Christmas Eve, her candle is blown out. And you know this from the text, that it's a sort of a little charade, but they both go along with it, and they're down on the floor looking for her key, which then she's lost, and their hands touch, and he says, "Your tiny hand is frozen." And then he goes on to tell her who he is. "I am a poet, but nothing has been published yet." It's that first date scene where you tell people who you are and what you're about and what your hopes are. And when he finishes, she in turn tells him, "They call me Mimi, mi chiamano Mimi. But my name is Lucia, and I'm a little seamstress, and I sit in my garret sewing silk flowers on hats." So that's how it happens. And in opera, you have to fall in love very fast. There's not a lot of time. But in this one, it's very fast. And quickly, I mean, he even suggests they stay in for the rest of the evening. This is within an hour of meeting. And their friends are calling from the street below saying, "Come and join us. It's Christmas Eve. We're going to party." And he says, "I'll be down in a minute, but I'm bringing a friend." So maybe we should listen to not the whole of these two arias, but part of "Your Tiny Hand is Frozen" with Pavarotti. And "They Call Me Mimi" with Mirella Freni.
Con voi pur ora e vi miei suoi.
and we're listening to music from La Boheme and Rodolfo and Mimi falling in love. Now, we're going to, in a couple of minutes here, a love duet. Let's talk about, I mean, that's almost a standard in opera is love
absolutely,
duets.
Yes. And in Puccini, it's there's almost a, you know, a style or a predictable progression in his operas. In the first act, the young lovers fall in love and they sing an ecstatic love duet. And things go downhill from there. That's typically what happens. That's true in this opera too. And it seems in Puccini's own life, he was very ambivalent in terms of his relationships with women. On one hand, there were the sort of the saintly women like his mother, whom he loved. He adored her and respected her. But on the other hand, there were the liaisons that he had over and over again, which drove his wife, Elvira, crazy and actually culminated in a court case at one point where she accused him of having an affair with a young woman, Doria Manfredi, which it turned out was not true. But she persecuted this young girl so much that the girl committed suicide, took arsenic and died. Terrible. So he was a one for the girls. And in his operas, he seems to love can never be without strings. You have to pay for love. If you're in love, there's a price to pay. It's a very sort of Catholic thing, I suppose. If it's not, you know, straight to the altar in marriage, in these situations, these two have fallen in love. What happens with Mimi and Rodolfo is because of her health and his guilt about not being able to take care of her. But at this point, they are blissfully in love, and this happens in nearly all of Puccini's operas. Think of Madama Butterfly. There is a wedding scene, and then there's the wedding night, that ecstatic duet.
Right.
In Manon, it happens as well. Manon was the opera that preceded this one. In Turandot is different, the last opera, because the love duet really doesn't come till the very end, surprisingly there. But typically, this is the format that he followed. The young couple fall in love, everything is blissfully happy, and then it begins to go downhill. So maybe we could hear a little of that beautiful love duet from La Boheme at the end of the first act, just as Mimi and Rodolfo decide they're going to join their friends for Christmas Eve and party in the streets of Paris as the first act ends. And that's the love duet from first act of La Boheme.
And Pavarotti singing.
I know. There's always a sort of a sad sweetness listening to his voice now, knowing he's not with us. His voice will always be with us, but
yeah.
The man is no longer with us. That's always sad.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Desiree Mays about opera. We're going to take a little break right now, and we'll be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned to KSFR. And we're back with Desiree Mays talking about La Bohème and the Santa Fe Opera. Now let's talk about the role of women in this time and in this opera. There's this great character named Musetta. Mimi is a kind of tragic, very sweet, romantic heroine. She's very nice, but Musetta, she's feisty.
Yeah, she's a fireball. She really is. This is an interesting moment in history, actually, in terms of the role of women. In Verdi's operas, for instance, women always knew their place. They were either born to the aristocracy and they had a life handed them on a plate, which may or may not be a happy one, depending on how circumstances worked out. And then everybody else would sort of be in service. They all had jobs, per se. By this time, after the French Revolution, things have changed a lot. We're talking about 19th century Paris. The king has been restored, and women were a little at sea as to what to do. They really could not go out and get jobs. It was difficult to do that. If they didn't want to be in service, what would they do? So there were many like these young women, Mimi, who is a little seamstress, and Musetta, who's a singer. Now, Musetta decides she can use her charms to fascinate men and go from one to the other. She does. She's very flighty. And they love having this extraordinary, glamorous woman on their arm. And as long as they amuse her, she is amused by them. As time went on, of course, once these women, if they did not manage to make a marriage or settle down in some way, life was pretty grim. There was no social support for them. They would get tuberculosis. Was rampant. Many of them became prostitutes and died in horrendous circumstances. This was happening. This was the underside of Paris and Montmartre at the time. For these young women, they become the girlfriends of these young students. Some of them, in many cases, with art at the period, like Toulouse-Lautrec, they would become models for their artists, and then they'd move in with their artist friends. They would provide them with a sort of inspiration. So there weren't many choices for women, and these two have no background, no family, and they have to make out for themselves. Now, they are fiercely independent. They're great women, both of them. They decide they are going to lead their own lives on their terms, and when they have a sexual relationship with these young men, it's on their terms also, as we see with Musetta and Marcello. Marcello is the painter, and he's passionate about Musetta, but she runs hot and cold. You know, she's in love with him one week, and she hates him the next, and the whole opera goes through this way. I mean, in the end, they end up screaming at one another, and he calls a strega, witch. but at heart, the contrast is incredible. You have this very sweet, romantic love duet between Mimi and Rodolfo, and then on the other hand, Musetta, the singer, but the singer with the good heart.
She has a very good heart.
She has a good heart because she's the one who stands by Mimi when Mimi's in trouble. And the very first act, where Mimi sees her, Mimi sums her up very quickly. She says, for all her game playing, she actually loves Marcello. So her entrance is marvelous. It's one of the big, great, fun entrances of opera. We'll hear Musetta's waltz. She comes on stage. It's Christmas Eve, remember, with an elderly man behind her, staggering under gorgeous boxes of things that she has bought. And they sit down together at the table next to the four friends. Now, Musetta is aware that Marcello's there, and she's flirting outrageously with everyone. And then she takes center stage, and she says that she loves being center stage and being the apple of everyone's eye, and sings this wonderful waltz. Heidi Stober will sing our Musetta in this production, and she'll be great. And then at the end of it, she's wondering, how am I going to get rid of Alcindoro, the older man, so that she can go to Marcello? So suddenly there's a scream, a very non-operatic scream. She says, my shoe is hurting me. You have to go and fix it. So she sends him off to fix the shoe and runs to the arms of Marcello. So that's the setup for Musetta, and it's a lovely light moment. Again, we're still in the light, happy part of this opera when she sings Musetta's waltz.
Thank you.
And that's Musetta's Waltz from the party scene, the Christmas Eve scene, which is always a gorgeous scene. And our production is going to be interesting. They've gone for more of a realistic sense. It is Paris and Christmas Eve, and it's cold and snowy. But you get a sense of the reality of the hardness of the life. Sometimes you can skim over the top of this story and just show the romantic side of it. But this director, Paul Curran, does show the reality that things are tough. So,
well, and that's a major part. You wouldn't want to skim over that, because that's a major part of the opera. These people are hungry, they're cold.
That's right.
The girl's dying of tuberculosis, her hands are cold for the entire length of the opera, basically.
That's right. Yeah, though the operas before, of course, had always given a much more romantic spin on things. Even with Violetta and La Traviata of Verdi, she is a woman, a demi-monde, who sort of falls between these classes and becomes a courtesan, and she lives as a courtesan. But we get a rather romantic view of this courtesan without the underside and the fact that she too has consumption. These women, this was the sort of the disease of the day, I'm afraid. But by the third act, things have changed. There's a wonderful opening to this act. It's a few months later. They've lived together through the winter. It's still snowing in Paris, and we're at the gates of the Barrière d'Enfer, which is a gate into Paris. And in those days, the city gates would be closed at night, and then people would line up in the morning. The people bringing in farm produce and milk, dairy products would come in. And this is how the scene opens. Puccini makes this marvelous sense of the snow falling in this very cold space. And the gates are opened and the police let the people in. And Mimi is amongst them. She is coughing. She looks miserable. And she goes to the inn but won't go in. She knocks on the door and asks for Marcello. Marcello and Musetta are now living together. He's given up ideas of painting for the salon. He's painting signs for taverns, which is really rather sad, but he has to pay the rent. And she's giving singing lessons. So Marcello comes out and he sees Mimi and he's shocked. He says, "What's the matter?" And she says, "We had a terrible row, Rodolfo and I, last night, and he left and he came here. And I think the time has come for us to split up. He's accusing me of being unfaithful. Even in sleep, he thinks that I'm being unfaithful." This is the theme, I think, that runs through most of the season's operas, actually, the issue of being unfaithful. So Marcello says, "Go home, Mimi, go home," because he hears Rodolfo coming out. They have a conversation, and Marcello confronts him. He says, "What's this about Mimi being unfaithful? I don't believe it for a minute." And Rodolfo says, "No, actually, it's not true. She's not unfaithful to me, but I cannot take care of her. She has tuberculosis. She's clearly getting worse and worse. She's dying, and I can offer her nothing. The garret is cold, so this is a way of pushing her away from him."
Yeah, it's a psychological. Yeah. I'm going to get mad at you rather than my own feelings.
Yeah, that it's his own fault. But in this case, he actually faces up to it. Marcello is a good friend. And then the act ends with a wonderful scene, the quartet. I'd love to play a little for you, where Mimi is coughing and Rodolfo suddenly hears her coughing outside. And he goes to her and he holds her and they sort of kiss and make up. But they decide that when the spring comes, perhaps it would be better that they part. So we get again a lovely romantic but heartrending duet from these two. And at the same time, Marcello has gone back into the tavern because he's heard Musetta laughing. And he's quite convinced she's flirting with the customers, which he probably is. And he ends up, you know, name-calling her. So you hear this lovely contrast in this duet with Mimi and Rodolfo being reunited briefly. And then Marcello and Musetta having a row. Maybe we can hear a little of that.
Non ci vedi, 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 non ci vedi
That gives a good sense of what's happening at the end of the third act of La Bohème by Giacomo Puccini.
And we heard that Strega right there.
They're name calling. One can identify with that. So this recording is a lovely one. It's with Pavarotti singing Rodolfo, Mirella Freni is Mimi, Musetta is sung by Elizabeth Harwood, and the conductor is Herbert von Karajan with the Berlin Philharmonic. So then we get to the last act where Marcello and Rodolfo are alone back in the garret where we started. But they can't work. They can't concentrate because they're both thinking of their two girlfriends. And then they have very little food. Things are not good. They're sharing a fish. It turns out that one time in Milan, Puccini and Leoncavallo had only one fish to share between them for dinner. And it gets written into this piece. There's a lot of very human little moments that are Puccini's and maybe everybody else's in the opera. And then they decide to stay warm. They're going to have mock fighting, and they're fooling around. There's a knock on the door, and it's Musetta. She says she has found Mimi. She's in the street, and she's trying to reach Rodolfo and the friends. She has stayed a friend of Mimi's, and she brings her in, and truly, Mimi is dying. And at this point, the friends all gather around, and they're a little helpless. These are young people who have not had much experience of death, and they're not quite sure how. What should they do? How can they help? I saw Jonathan Miller direct this cast of young singers in the death scene once, and it was a revelation. This director is also an MD, and he says, what is the process of death?
Yeah.
And he took them through that. I mean, he graphically told them what happened with tuberculosis, how you can help and how you can't. And he described how the instinct is to go over and help and hold someone and make them feel better, but you don't know if you should.
Yeah.
All of those things. So in this case, each one of them in character decides how they're going to help. Mimi complains that her hands are still cold, as you pointed out, and she wants a muff. So Musetta takes off her very expensive earrings, and she says to Marcello, we'll go sell them and buy a muff, and they leave. Then Collina, who is the philosopher, one of the other young men, wears this big, heavy overcoat throughout the whole piece to
and
keep himself warm.
That's his
warm.
Big moment, because he's saying he wants to pawn the coat for her, and he's saying goodbye to the coat.
That's right.
So the philosophers who've been in the pockets of his coat the poets, it's great.
It's a lovely moment. In Scènes de la Vie de Bohème, the original story, apparently this coat had four giant pockets in which he'd keep his books.
Yeah.
And each pocket he named for a different library in Paris. It's a sweet moment. But now he decides that he will give up his coat. He will go sell it to buy medicine for Mimi. And there's a little aria. It's a bass aria that comes right near the end of the opera with Collina and his coat.
Do we have time to hear just a minute?
Yes, we can
two?
Hear. It's a short one. So let's hear a little of Collina's farewell to his overcoat. And not just farewell to his overcoat, but maybe it's a farewell to that way of life, because with Mimi's death, they all move on. They grow up and they become famous or not famous, but they get on with their lives and they become part of the establishment. It's the old process of growing up, I suppose.
which we won't see unless somebody makes La Bohème 2.
Well, that's true too. So let's hear Collina's farewell to his overcoat.
Grazie ricevi. Ai un cuore.
And that was the Overcoat aria. And what a voice.
A beautiful voice. Nikolai Gurarov, who's one of the great bass voices, was, sadly, singing the aria of Collina at the very end of La Bohème. Well, now, of course, we come to the great death scene for which opera is so famous. The great death scenes, all the great heroines die, and that's true in this opera. Each one comes back, and they try to help Mimi. They're a little helpless. And they also realize that Mimi and Rodolfo need to be alone. So they find reasons to leave. And as soon as they're alone, she brings out the little pink bonnet that Rodolfo bought for her that very on the first date.
Right.
And they go back and they reprise all of the beautiful music that came from the first and second acts. So it really works
just
your heartstrings.
Just as they're kind of going over their relationship, they're doing the music from it.
Exactly. They repeat the music and it brings you back and it brings them together. And we are brought into that relationship, I think, at that moment, with all of its poignancy, the love, the lost love, and the fact that she is dying so young and that he will be distraught. So maybe we can play a little of the final scene from La Bohème to nearly wrap up today's show.
Yeah.
And that's part of the final death scene from La Bohème. So everyone has to go and see it to see how the whole thing ends. It's a beautiful piece. Really
everyone has to see it to see whether or not she really dies at the end.
She dies. She does. You'll need tissues for this one.
So we're talking to Desiree Mays, and the she's the author of Opera Unveiled, which is the book that accompanies the Santa Fe Opera every year. And the cover picture this year is a painting that accompanies La Bohème.
Yes, it happened just by chance. I was walking into Nedra Martucci's gorgeous gallery on the Paseo de Peralto here in Santa Fe, and I go in the door, and on the left there's a painting hanging that is a painting of La Bohème. It's amazing. It was not intended as such. It's actually called the Latin Quarter. It's by a Russian painter, Leon Gaspar, a young man who had lived in Europe, who fought in World War I, was seriously wounded, and somehow came to Taos, ended up as one of the Taos painters in 1918. And the painting shows Paris. It shows a woman sitting having a coffee, center a stage, and she's sort of on her own, and you're wondering, has she been abandoned or what's happened to her? In the back, you see the Sacré-Cœur and the garret rooms. It was perfect. So I walk into this gallery and I ask Nedra Martucci, I said, could I possibly use this for the cover of the book? And she says, yes, you may. And if you want to go and see it, it's still hanging there. So I invite people to pop in, have a look at it. It's beautiful. It's La Bohème.
So we're almost out of time, but we want to let people know that the Santa Fe Opera opens on Friday, July 1st, and La Bohème, which we've just been talking about for the last hour, opens on Saturday, July 2nd at the Santa Fe Opera, which is at santafeopera.org. The phone number up there is 505-986-5900, and the 800 number is 800-280-4654. And in addition to the entire season of opera, which goes through August, there are also youth nights and family nights and tours and all kinds of good things.
We should talk about those. Yeah. Yes. And next week we're going to talk about Faust.
Yes, next week we're going to talk about Faust, where the girl also dies at the end.
She does, I'm afraid. It lightens up after that.
But anyway, Desiree Mays is the author of Opera Unveiled. She's an international lecturer on opera. And we will be here for the next four Mondays talking about the Santa Fe Opera season. Thank you so much for being with us. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We are broadcasting from the studios of KSFR. We're streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. And you can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. My email address, in case you want to write, is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Many thanks to the wonderful Marilyn LeBlanc for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news, and after that, jazz. Thank you.